This is the After Party, live with Kim McAllister. Pick a couch, grab a drink, and settle into the conversation.
Hey, everybody. It is the After Party Live. Thank you for being here and hanging out with me on this Monday afternoon. Some good stories coming up. It was a great Mark Thompson show. Really loving the co-host, Hal Rudnick, hanging out with him again tomorrow. That should be really fun. And it was a great Nicky Maduro show as well. So I'm happy. I'm a happy person today. I don't know about you. Thank you for hanging out with me today. If you could please click the like button, I would appreciate that right off I can't even deal with the music right now. If you could please click the like button right out of the gate, I would appreciate that. And if you are here and haven't subscribed, please do that. Slow and steady, we're working our way toward 2,000 subscribers. Nothing like now the 31,000 subscribers on the Mark Thompson Show. So that's another milestone there. But we're making our way toward 2,000, and we're going to keep on chugging up the tracks and hopefully get there sooner or later. I do want to acknowledge Wes, who over the weekend, I saw you guys talking about this in the chat, did make this interesting AI of me. He took my voice, and Wes, I don't know what kind of thing you plugged it into, but he puts it... It's going to be a little echoey. He puts it into some type of program, and he said in less than a minute, it made a copy of my voice. So I think maybe with more time, it could sound even more like me. I think it's a little too high, maybe a little too nasally, but maybe I'm a bad judge of what I sound like. I don't know. Check this out.
Speaking to you from KGO Studios in San Francisco, California. Join me on weekdays as I host the Kim McAllister Show with my assistant, Mark Thompson.
Oh, anyway. So that's what it sounded like. Sorry, I never turned that volume down on that. I can't play it in a better way for you. I'm sorry, but you kind of get the gist of it. Scary, right? I mean, I think that's pretty scary how quickly someone can try to take your voice and make it sound somewhat like you. And with a little more tampering, it could sound a lot like you. So I don't know. That's very disconcerting. Sorry if you couldn't hear that. I'll try to download it and play it a little better for you later on. But thanks, Wes, for doing that and freaking me out. Too much of an echo to hear? Okay. Yeah. I don't know if, yeah, I'll try to download it and play it again tomorrow. But it was really creepy. Really creepy. Try the YouTube link. I will do that. I can do that as well. Okay. All right, but first, let's get to some different stories, like Tourons. What, you ask, is a Touron? It's a perfect marriage of the word tourist and moron, a Touron. And there are out there, the Tourons, we know them well. You've seen them trying to take selfies or pictures near wildlife. Not smart, no. Trying to take pictures near the bears. No, you don't get close to wildlife. Here they are running and somebody even smiling, being chased by a bison. Are you kidding me? Yeah, I love this word. And once I think you hear it, now it's part of your vocabulary forever. Tourist plus moron, Touron. And they're all over the place, right? I don't know if you want to share in the chat if you've seen Tourons in your travels. But I love that. And it's even a word that park rangers are now using as they talk about people that are behaving badly in our state and national parks that are coming and swinging on signs, breaking signs, standing too close to wildlife, right? Going off trail where they really shouldn't be. They're not supposed to be doing this. You know, it says stay on the trail. And what do? Go off the trail and then maybe get lost. And then there's a huge rescue effort mounted because they did this type of thing. Touron. I think it's a great new word. And so apparently now we have the Touron season starting again. as people in nicer weather make their way back to state and national parks. And it's just one of these things where, how embarrassing. There's enough morons in the world that now we have to have a special name for them as they travel around. Yeah, a Touron. Anyway, I love the word. I wanted to share it with you because I think it's so applicable. Just crazy. All right, let's talk about animals. Speaking of Tourons, how about this one? Wow, just, I mean, wild. This is a story, oops, about a walrus. Hold on, sorry about this. All of a sudden my page is unresponsive. Oh no, everything is going straight to hell in a handbasket. What to do? What to do? So there's a story about this walrus, and someone decides that they're going to swim next to this walrus, and not a good idea, apparently against the law, and you can get fined for swimming next to these walruses. I mean, you don't want to ever get too close to wildlife, right? Authorities say this Touron went out to an ice floe and disturbed a walrus that was lying on the ice. There he is, minding his own business. And here comes this guy trying to swim with a walrus, getting close to the ice, getting close to the animal. So this happened in Norway. This tourist has been fined 12,500 Norwegian kroner, about 900 pounds. I don't know how much that is in dollars, but he goes out onto the ice floe, disturbs this walrus that was lying on the ice. They said members of the public saw him approach the animal and then reported him to the local governor, and that parts of this incident were also observed by the governor's employees. There's a law in this area stipulating people have to conduct themselves in a way which does not lead to unnecessary disturbance of wildlife. In other words, don't be a Touron. The tourist was subsequently brought to the governor's office. He accepts the fine. And the governor encourages now everyone keep a good distance from walruses so they're not disturbed and there's no danger to people as well. So, yeah. You put yourself at risk. You put other tourists at risk. You put the walrus at risk. I mean, come on now, Touron. Don't do it. All right. I have another story for you. And this one involves some video that I have to show you. And it's about... I've been meaning to show you guys this one for a couple of days. This is about an alligator that had been trapped for months in a drainage pipe. And finally, he's been rescued. Here's a little bit of footage.
Dane Kay Wildlife Services got the call from the Port Royal Plantation Security just a few weeks ago. Craig Carr said the gator may have gotten stuck when swimming through the drainage pipes of the lagoon. Said the gator's nose changed colors from rubbing against the grate. Despite being stuck for, as we said, some say about 6 months, Craig Carr says the gator's natural abilities allowed it to survive.
Well, they can go into brumation, which is basically like hibernation for reptiles. So as it gets cooler, they're going to shut their body down. So by doing that, he doesn't really need to eat as much as he typically would during the summer. And I'm sure there was still fish and turtles coming through those pipes as well. So he didn't look like he was starving by any means.
Craigar was able to free the gator by removing the grate and pulling him up with a catch pole. As soon as the gator was out, he ran straight for the water.
I don't know why I feel like that guy is leading me on a tour. Like, his tour guide voice. I don't know. I don't know about that. Another story that I wanted to talk to you guys about today. This one includes... another video. Do I have another video? Oh, how about the lotto of the day? Yeah, this one, this lady, her boyfriend encourages her to buy this lottery ticket. He says, no, really, you got to go buy the lottery ticket. This happens in Maryland. And so she does. He urges her to buy the ticket and she wins $50,000. I wonder if she's giving him any. He always says, just play. It's only a couple of bucks. So she buys a $10 quick pick winning ticket at Weis Markets, in Laurel, Maryland before the April 20th drawing. The ticket stayed in her purse a few days. She found it. She scanned it with the Maryland app. She said, this has to be a glitch. No way. But nope. She confirms with another scan of the ticket, she's a winner. She said she plans to use her winnings for a vacation with her daughter and then continue maybe buying lottery tickets on occasion as well. Because why not, right? Yeah. I don't know. I think the boyfriend deserves something. At least a little something, right? Come on now. This is a Mars ascent vehicle. It turns out that NASA is now seeking help from private companies for this expensive Mars sample return mission. They are looking for help, new ideas. So it might be something good. This is a critical NASA mission in the search for life beyond Earth. Mars sample return, they say it's in trouble. They had a budget that ballooned from $5 billion to over $11 billion. And the sample return date may slip from the end of the decade of this decade to now 2040. This mission would be the first to try to return rock samples from Mars to Earth so that scientists can try to analyze these samples for signs of past life. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson said during a press conference that the mission, currently conceived, is just too expensive and it's also too slow. So NASA gave private companies a month to submit proposals for bringing the samples back in a quicker and in a more affordable way. Will they be successful? Will anyone take them up on this? Is it an affordable mission that they could actually pull off? I don't know. The Mars, they call it the nearest and best place to search for life beyond Earth. And if this ambitious NASA mission unraveled, scientists would lose their chance to learn much more about the red planet. I don't know. The first time NASA looked for life in a Mars rock, 1996, they said they discovered microscopic fossils of bacteria in a Martian meteorite, a piece of Mars that landed in Antarctica 13,000 years ago. It was recovered in 1984. Scientists disagreed over whether the meteorite really had ever harbored any biology. Today, most scientists agree there's not enough evidence to say the rock contains any fossils or not. There have been several hundred Martian meteorites found on Earth in the last 40 years. Free samples that fell to Earth, like Costco. Free samples. So scientists can't tell where on Mars the meteorites originated. They want more information. They want to know where this came from. So that's why they need to go up there and collect them themselves. We'll see. I don't know. It might be too expensive. Remember the story? Here's a follow-up for you. Remember the story out of Chicago where they think it was a squirrel, actually, but they call it the rat hole. They think the squirrel died and kind of melted into the pavement that had been there for so long, and it made this outline that looked like a rat, and they called it the rat hole. And people came to take pictures with the rat hole. Like, the rat hole became a big to-do. It's in Roscoe Village in Chicago. It became this viral phenomenon, and they've now taken it out, the city. They're done. They do say they preserved it. They're trying to figure out where to put it. So they took out the slab of concrete with the rat hole in it, and then they repaved the sidewalk. Yeah, it's gone. Fresh concrete, already poured. They were getting a lot of complaints from neighbors in this area about people gathering at the rat hole, taking pictures, having their picture taken, what have you. And it was apparently very distracting in this neighborhood. People didn't want someone outside their house, big groups of people outside of their house congregating on the sidewalk. So they did, again, preserve this, they call it a tourist attraction, but they're now trying to figure out, where do we put the rat hole? What are we going to do with it? Some residents say they'll miss the rat hole. They felt like they were living next to a celebrity. It was amusing. It put their little neighborhood on the map. Others said, yeah, no. Not with the amount of people it was attracting. We got to take this thing down. So that they did. Maybe it'll go to a museum. I don't know where it'll go. Not sure. They'll figure it out, I guess. They call the rat hole a cultural phenomenon. Neighbors said that hole had been around for at least 20 years. Not everyone, though, again, convinced it's a rat. Some people say it was definitely a squirrel. Yeah. There used to be a big tree above it. You could see where the branch was immediately above where the squirrel fell. Just the shape and the tail and everything. It was a squirrel. But the Chicago rat hole went viral after a local comedian posted about it on social media. Then it had its own Wikipedia page. And somebody even got married there. There was a couple that tied the knot right at the rat hole. So, yeah. Some people say we haven't given up hope that the rat hole will be somewhere where everyone can visit. But it was right at the bottom of these people's stairs. I can imagine living there being a little frustrated with that. Yeah. So this is a kind of a weird story to do, and I understand, and I thought, should I do this or not? But I was so fascinated by it that I thought I had to share some of these pictures with you. There's a design contest. 18 designers created walking sticks for their future selves. So it was a part of an exhibition at the Triennale Milano from Milan Design Work. And they had these 18 designers from around the world that created these walking sticks. And I was so fascinated by the way they looked. Look at this one. You can tuck stuff in there, like a knot. You can put your things in there. Here's another one. There's a lot of walking sticks. My dad uses a walking stick and it's always falling down. You know, you prop it up against something, it's falling down. So this one has a little hook where you can grab it with your hand, but then you can also clip it to a table or clip it to a surface. So I thought that was pretty clever. Here's one. You see the bag hanging off of it? So it's like got a little round shape where you can tuck your, it's kind of like the stroller clips that I used to have when I was pushing a stroller. So now you can, you know, take the weight off of you. I guess you still have to lift the bag with the walking stick, but it makes it a little easier on your hands, especially if you're trying to juggle a walking stick and shopping bags. We've got a little shopping bag carrier walking stick. Love it. Here's a bunch of them. Kind of interesting looking designs. My favorite one is that one you see with the basket. I mean, how convenient is this? It's a walking stick. It's also a basket. You can carry your fruits and veggies, some little item you bought from the store, throw your cell phone in there, pair of scissors, some tape, you know, the things you're going to need as you walk along. I love the basket one. That was my favorite. All right. I just wanted to show you those because I thought the pictures were interesting. Thank you for bearing with me on the walking stick design. How about the hub back to space? How about the Hubble in trouble? It's now in safe mode after apparently some faulty readings. We've gotten the most beautiful images from NASA's Hubble telescope. They're trying to, NASA scientists, restore operations to the Hubble after pausing them earlier last week because of issues with the orbiting instrument's gyroscope. So NASA says all instruments are stable aboard the telescope. It turned 34 last week, one day after NASA scientists put it into safe mode because of this ongoing issue. The gyroscope has been giving faulty readings, which is the instrument that determines which direction the telescope is pointing in. So all science-related operations have been suspended while NASA works to fix the issue, eventually feed the telescope new directions. They've been having problems with this gyroscope since last year. So it's not new, but having to put it in safe mode to address the issues, that's new. They had faulty readings being transmitted from the gyroscope, similar to the ones currently plaguing the telescope. They'd had that a year ago. So they run diagnostics that they did last year, and they found that it was intact. It was in good condition. They put in 6 new gyros in 2009 during the 5th and final space shuttle servicing mission. And 3 of those remain operational today, including the one currently experiencing the difficulty. So they think it's okay that they're going to fix it, and Hubble will continue making groundbreaking discoveries, working with other observatories like the James Webb Telescope as well, possibly this decade and into the next as well. So we haven't seen the last of the Hubble, even though it's in a little bit of trouble. How about this Lego? Oh, love a good Lego story. This one is a Lego discovery. And I didn't know this. I was unaware. But this 13-year-old boy was very aware that 5 million Lego pieces were lost during a storm in 1997. They, I guess, went overboard into the sea. And 4,200 octopus pieces were among them, among the 5 million. And this boy has been searching beaches to find one. And finally, he did. His name is Leotoris Semlonoskis. And he said he'd been hoping to find a holy grail of plastic octopus for 2 years on his hunt for pieces of Lego that fell into the sea in 1997 when a cargo ship encountered a storm. So among the Lego pieces that went into the drink, 352,000 pairs of flippers, 97,500 scuba tanks, 92,400 swords, and 4,200 octopuses. He found it on a beach in Marazion. He said he regularly goes to the beaches with his parents, and he's collected 789 Lego pieces over 2 years. He's also found a bunch of fossils. But he said, I've been looking for the octopus, looking for it for 2 years. Not easy to find. He said he wasn't really expecting to because they're so rare. But they found it. There's a whole project on this, and I did not know anything about it. It's called the Lost at Sea Project. And they've spent years trying to find the plastic pieces since they spilled into the ocean. So one woman, a beachcomber who was in charge of this Lego Lost at Sea project, found one octopus in 1997 and then didn't recover another one until another 18 years later. She said, I think there's something quite magical about the octopuses. They're often seen as the holy grail of finds from that particular shipping container. Quite an exciting development, though, that this boy found one. And I guess there was a second one right after he found his. 2 days later, another one was found. And they think maybe it was because of a very high spring tide with some strong offshore winds. And when the waves eat into the dunes during this type of condition, they release a lot of plastic that washed up. So it's kind of sad how much plastic is on this beach, how much debris, you know, old plastic pieces. They're recording, though, where all this stuff washes up so they can try to figure out where the best place it would be to look for these Lego pieces. I don't know. But check this out. This is a picture of what it looks like on that beach. And it's just, I don't know. It's like debris, garbage, trash, plastic, just yuck. Check it out. This is what it looks like on that beach. I mean, yeah. And you can kind of see bits of chunks in this picture, but look at this. That does not look like a nice beach to walk on. Granted, if you're out looking for stuff and picking through and trying to find something interesting, maybe, but it just looks like a beach full of garbage. If I have walked out onto a beach here where I live in Sonoma County and it looked like that, I'd be really sad. I think I would be out there with garbage bags trying to sift all that stuff up and get it out. I know more of it's going to wash up and wash up and wash up. But how sad is that? I mean, glad that he found his octopus, but it's kind of a bummer. Look at it. You can see chunks of plastic. Look at that white, jagged plastic. This is not a beach where you walk with your toes in the sand. This is a beach where you have your work boots on and hope you don't get poked with anything weird. What a bummer. There's a new rule in England, and I don't know if this should be a rule or not, But it's a rule where the UK is banning easy passwords like admin or 12345. Those kinds of passwords that we've all been told don't use those, right? Now, though, they're banned from being used as passwords in the UK. See, I tend to think, listen, if you want to have an easy password and set yourself up for fraud, that's your business. You know, we've all been warned. At this point, we should all know better, but they're legislating it in the UK. Common and easily guessed passwords are being banned in the UK, part of world first laws to protect against cyber attacks. So if a user suggests a common password, they'll be prompted to change it on creation of a new account. This comes as a home filled with smart devices could be exposed to more than 12,000 hacking attacks from across the world in a single week. 2,684 attempts to guess weak passwords on 5 devices. Password managing website NordPass found the most commonly used passwords in the UK last year were 123456. And believe it or not, password. What's the password? Password. The new measures come into force in the UK, making it the first country in the world to introduce this type of law, part of the Product Security and Telecommunications Infrastructure, designed to improve the UK's resilience from cyber attacks and ensure malign interference does not impact the wider UK and global economy. This story from Sky News. Under the law, they say manufacturers of all internet-connected devices, from mobile phones to smart doorbells, even high-tech refrigerators, will be required to implement minimum security standards. They have to publish contact details so bugs and issues can be reported and resolved, and tell consumers the minimum time they can expect to receive important security updates. So, here's the 10 most commonly used passwords in the UK in 2023. Number 1, 123456. Number 2, password. Number 3, QWERTY. Number 4, Liverpool. Number 5, 123456789. Number 6, Arsenal. Number 7, 123456789. Number 8, 12345. Number 9, ABC123. And number 10, Chelsea. So, come on. It was so easy. I'm telling you. According to recent figures, 99% of adults in the UK own at least one smart device, and UK households have an average of 9 connected devices. So the Viscount Camrose, who is the science and technology minister, says from today, consumers will have greater peace of mind that their smart devices are protected from cyber criminals. We're committed to making the UK the safest place in the world to be online, and these new regulations mark a significant leap toward a more secure digital world. You got to figure something else out other than 12345, right? Come on. I get that people don't remember passwords. I understand. I'm guilty of it myself. I was reading a meme the other day that said, why is it I can remember my phone number from when I was a child, but I can't remember the password I just set up 2 days ago? Really? I mean, it's so true. Come on. But you have to take a little more precaution than that, I think. Anyway. There's some new technology that's pretty exciting. This is a discovery of material that can store greenhouse gases faster than trees. Yeah. So the findings really being celebrated by researchers saying this could help solve one of our biggest challenges in society. The material is made up of hollow cage-like molecules that have high storage capabilities for greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide and sulfur hexafluoride, which is a more potent gas that can last thousands of years in the atmosphere. The research done at Harriet Watt University in Edinburgh, the research has the potential, they say, to help solve our biggest challenges. Direct air capture of carbon dioxide, increasingly important, because even when we stop emitting carbon dioxide, there's still going to be a huge need to capture previous emissions that are already in the environment. So planting trees is a very effective way to absorb carbon, but they say it's slow. So we need a human intervention, like human-made molecules, to capture greenhouse gases efficiently from the environment, and we need to do it more quickly. And maybe this is the answer. They say greenhouse gases are one of the main factors for global warming and climate change. So these molecules work like walls of a greenhouse, trapping heat in the Earth's atmosphere. And while carbon dioxide is released naturally, the sulfur hexafluoride is a man-made gas that traps heat very effectively. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. They used computer simulations to predict how molecules would assemble themselves into the new material, and they're trying to develop it more, enhance it more through the use of AI. Maybe Wes can help with that. But maybe if they get it right, it could really make a difference in one of these challenges that's really pressing, right? The doctor, Dr. Little, who is involved in this study, said it's an important step in developing other materials and said the molecules with complex structures could also be used to remove toxic compounds like volatile organic compounds from the air and could play an important role in medical science as well. So it's promising. I mean, at least we're moving in the right direction in this area. Do you know about Martian spiders? Because I had never heard of this before until last night. And now I'd love to share the story with you. This is a story about what happens on Mars. And they're not really spiders, but they sure look like it when you look at pictures of it. This is they call it spider season on the red planet. And while there are no actual spiders on Mars, there are these black arachnid-shaped dots. Every spring, they pop up. The European Space Agency released new images of these seasonal eruptions in a formation called Inca City in Mars' southern polar region. Mars, kind of like here in America, has four distinct seasons. Each Martian season, though, lasts roughly twice as long as a season here. These spider-like marks appear in Martian spring when sunlight falls on layers of carbon dioxide that's been deposited over the dark Martian winter. And here's how it works. The sunlight causes carbon dioxide ice at the bottom layer to turn into gas. The gas builds up and eventually breaks through slabs overlying ice around Mars poles. And when they burst free, the dark material is dragged up to the surface as it travels, and then it shatters layers of ice up to 3 feet thick. The emerging gas is full of dark dust, and it shoots up through the cracks in the ice, similar to like a fountain or geyser. Then the gas travels back down, and it settles on the surface. And the settling gas creates dark spots, which range from about 0.3 to 0.6 miles across. And the same process creates these spider-shaped patterns that are etched right beneath the ice. So every spring this happens, they call it spider season on Mars. Creepy. This image was captured by the CASIS instrument aboard the European Space Agency's ExoMars Trace Gas Orbiter. Color and Stereo Surface Imaging System is what CASIS stands for. It was built at the University of Bern in Germany. It creates high-resolution images designed to complement data collected on Mars, made up of a telescope and a focal plane system mounted on a rotation mechanism with three electronic units that relay images back to the ESA. So interesting. They're not sure how this area originally formed on Mars. You can see it there on the left. It's called Inca City. It might be sand dunes that turned to stone over millennia. Maybe materials like magma or sand are seeping through cracked sheets of Martian rock. They don't know. They also could be winding structures related to glaciers called eskers. So much to find out. But I love the spider pictures. That is what it looks like. Let's just hope they're not real giant spiders crawling all over Mars. Ooh. Here's a story. We talked earlier on the Mark Thompson Show about the Titanic 2. What about a luxury submersible, anyone? No? Make you think of what happened? Yeah, it makes me think of what happened with the situation when they went to see the folks went to see the Titanic. Remember that? When Ocean's Gate, they tested their Titan submersible. And then it went missing last summer. They had a group of people they were taking down to see the Titanic wreckage, and the whole thing imploded. Yeah, doesn't really maybe make me feel confident about climbing aboard a submersible. But this one they think is better tested, right? It's the latest in ocean submersibles by a different company, Triton. And this one is called the 669 AVA. It's not going to dive as deep as the one that imploded. This is the deepest diving sub in the world. Yeah. The new 669 AVA promises an over-the-top luxurious experience. So it goes 600 feet below the surface. Its sister is the deepest one. This one is not the deepest one. But they go 600 feet below. Technically, deep sea starts at 656 feet below. So you're not going to go deep sea, but close. It offers 8 passengers and a pilot a panoramic view of the water world, pardon me, surrounding them. They put out a video this week highlighting the submersible Triton as a vessel of discovery crafted for extraordinary experiences. They held their first cruise earlier this month. It looks interesting. I mean, I don't know. Should we take a look at it? I might have to turn the sound off because it might have music. But here's what it looks like when you're inside, right?
I'm
built
to Triton submarines. Since 2007, we've created the world's safest and most technologically advanced luxury deep submersibles. Triton has always pushed the boundaries of what's possible. And along with all the manufacturers of certified and accredited submersibles, we enjoy a 4-year track record of perfect safety.
In the engineering office, we get input from our in-house manufacturing experts and some of the world's most experienced offshore operations personnel.
The Abahull's unique shape enables for high kind of a new submersible turns to the production phase. Only the highest quality components are selected and tested from around the globe.
I guess that's better than a remote control, right? I mean, that's what we had the last time. No.
Our world.
The DNV certification means this submersible has been inspected beginning at the first drawing to the very end of the sea trials. We, as a DNV surveyor, are inside of the submersible at the first dive to maximum depth to prove our confidence in this product. That means this submersible is absolutely safe for passengers and their future use.
Our latest project fuses. Yeah.
So that's what it looks like. I like that it's that you can see. I mean, because that other one would have given me claustrophobia, the one that imploded, that kind of metal shell. I like that you can see out, but I'm just not, I don't think I'd be comfortable going on a submersible like this. I don't know. What do you think? I'm going to the chat. Are you ready for this thing? Walter says, I want a submersible that looks like the Millennium Falcon. Jennifer says, I think Stockton Rush said those exact same words. Yeah, it's safe. Climb aboard. It's all right. Good to go. No problem. Really. More toys for rich people. Sounds like it. Listen, I guess if you were oozing money and it was your dream to go underwater like this and see, almost like you were swimming under water but breathing air, perhaps this is your thing, what you want to spend money on. I mean, anytime you take something like this under the ocean, there's a risk. I'm betting you still have to sign the disclaimer. Remember the other people? They had to sign the thing, you know? Is that a lazy boy in there? You're supposed to get, it's luxury. So you get champagne, you get like, you know, really treated well in your comfy chair as you, you know, scoot underwater in this submersible. Doug's like, yeah, no, I'm not going on that. I don't think so. John wants the kind of submersible car James Bond had. That I could get behind. I don't know. Beth says luxury equals heat and nice seating and champagne. Come on. I feel like Martian spiders are a better risk than that thing. I think you might be right. Oh, that's funny. Only rich people go down. Yeah. There's something to that, Walter. You know, it's such an interesting world. New things discovered all the time. So to go immerse yourself in this whole other world right here on Earth, there's something fascinating about that. But I don't necessarily think that we've been up to the task when it comes to safety. Yeah, absolutely. Wait, there's champagne? Yes, there's champagne. This is all luxury, I'm telling you. Like, they treat you right, because it must be really expensive. They didn't give me a price. They probably know. They're like, she can't afford this anyway, so we don't have to give her the price. But over the next 2 years, passengers will have the opportunity to lower the submersible down for a look through ocean waters off the coasts of New Zealand, Indonesia, and even East Antarctica. Could be interesting. The clarity of the acrylic hull, once submerged, is such that you feel at one with the water. This from the Scenic Luxury Cruises and Tour Director and Discovery Operations. Kind of like the Julie of the Love Boat, but of the sea. Encountering the vibrant marine life of the South Pacific and Australia's Great Barrier Reef within Scenic Neptune 2 will create memories to last a lifetime. Well, yeah, I guess. Give me some champagne. Take me down. Let me look at all the stuff. I don't know. I'm still not ready for it. But I thought that was pretty interesting. So what? In the same day, I've heard now that we're doing a Titanic 2 and yet another ocean submersible. This isn't the only one. This company has a bunch of them, and they do these tours. This is just the latest one. After everything that happened with that other one, that I don't know. I'm very wary of this. There's something new in, I think it's in the UK. Yeah. It's Queen Elizabeth with her corgis. It's a new statue that has been unveiled, honoring Elizabeth II and her beloved corgis. It's a 7-foot-tall bronze monument billed as the first permanent memorial to the late queen. This is created by a London-based sculptor, and it was unveiled Sunday on what would have been her 98th birthday. And, you know, she loved these corgis. So to have them included in that, you know, below, down below, is pretty sweet. She, this, again, 7 feet tall. It's located on a lush, grassy area outside the library in Oakham, England, which is a small town about 100 miles north of London. They had, when they did the unveiling, 40 corgis from the Welsh Corgi League showed up to this event, and they had a big parade to the Oakham Castle. The piece was commissioned by Sarah Furness, Lord Lieutenant of Rutland. It cost about $155,000, and it was funded mostly by donations. So, yeah, the first permanent memorial to Britain's much-loved and longest-reigning monarch. It depicts Elizabeth standing tall, wearing a state robe and crown. A bronze corgi sits at her feet, nestled against folds of her gown. The statue of the queen rests atop a pedestal made of local Ancaster limestone, which features two additional bronze corgis, one with its front paws on the pedestal, others standing on all fours. Here's the question. You think those two corgis on the bottom are going to stay there? Maybe this is a really nice town and no one steals, but if that was in San Francisco, those corgis would be gone. Gone. The dogs are meant to be a metaphor for the security and safety the nation somehow felt during the Elizabethan era, according to people in the town. So, there you go. I mean, it's cool looking. It's a nice statue. I guess it's time for these things to start popping up. But I fear for the safety of those little corgis down below. I think they're going to go. In Australia, they have this special biscuit. And they take this biscuit very, very seriously. It's a national holiday. It just passed. It was on April 25th. Called Anzac Day. A-N-Z-A-C. Anzac Day. And these biscuits are called Anzac biscuits. And they are meant to honor military veterans. The Anzac biscuit is, it's a big deal, especially on April 25th. It commemorates the anniversary of the landing of Australian and New Zealand soldiers in Turkey in 1915. It was the country's first major action against what was then the Ottoman Empire, an ally of Germany in World War I. The campaign lasted for 8 months. There were 25,000 Australian casualties, 8,700 deaths. And it's very, very strict what's to go in here. So they say every Australian family has their own recipe. It's a mixture of oats, desiccated coconut, flour, golden syrup, sugar, butter, baking soda, mixed together to form this dough, which is then rolled out into these golf ball-sized balls and pushed down and baked until they're golden in color. So you can find them year round in supermarkets in Australia. And some people add in extra butter, put in nuts, eggs, make them crispier, kind of tamper with them a little bit. But apparently commercial bakeries are not able to do that. They cannot deviate from the standard Anzac biscuit recipe unless they're given permission by the governing body, which is Australia's Department of Veterans Affairs. There have been businesses that tried to push the boundaries, doing a little riff on the traditional Anzac biscuit recipe, and they have been caught and they have been punished for adding chocolate chips or other things to this. And it's a jail-worthy crime. They mean business. Like, when you say this is an Anzac biscuit, it has to be specific. They have fined people up to $40,000 and put people in jail for up to a year. If you misuse the word Anzac, and it's not the same Anzac recipe that is the one that is agreed upon, you could get busted. Big time fines in jail. I mean, wow. They say it's in place to protect the integrity of the word Anzac and ensure that it's used respectfully in the community. Under the Crimes Act 1914, any commercial bakers who tweak the original Anzac biscuit recipe, whether that's calling it a cookie or adding un-Australian ingredients like almonds, sultanas, or chocolate, can be punished by law. Substitutions to accommodate gluten and lactose intolerances can be made, but everything else, no. So, they take it very seriously. They say, although there are some penalties for misuse of the word Anzac, the Australian public on the whole are very understanding of the need to protect the word, and as such, these penalties are rarely required. I guess this has been a thing there since World War I. The Anzac biscuit. Don't mess with it. It is what it is. So there you have it. All right. Well, that's what I have for you guys today. I'm so glad that you're here with me. And I would love it if you could click the like button. And if you can, every day I post at least one short, which is part of the video that maybe kind of stood out as being something interesting. Maybe I'll pull the spider one today. I don't know. If you could share that, that might help people find the show as we try to grow it. So I appreciate that. Thank you to everyone who's contributed to the show in a financial way, because that's the way to keep this thing rolling along as well. Huge, huge thank you to everyone. Big, big aloha. So if you see your name, that means that I have received your contribution to the show. A lot of people just set up a monthly contribution. The PayPal link is at the bottom of the show description. It's also in the About section here on YouTube. So a huge, huge aloha to everyone who's contributed. You are so, so appreciated. I will see you back tomorrow. It's Travel Tuesday. Where should we go? If you have any ideas, please, you can email them to me, kim@theafterparty.live. You can also find me at kgoinexile@gmail.com or kimmcallister@gmail.com. Two M's, two C's, two L's. There it is. All right. But have a great rest of your Monday afternoon, and I'll see you tomorrow on the Nikki Maduro Show. Have a good one, everybody. Bye-bye.
The After Party Live would like to thank the following contributors and viewers like you.